Today, we will be going over finding and vetting investments in private equity and venture capital. As a disclaimer before we get started, the Intrust Group, aka Intrust, does not provide any investment advice, nor do we endorse any products. All information is always for educational purposes only, and we also always encourage clients to chat with their accountant, financial advisor, attorney, etc., before entering into any investments. All right, today's agenda. So we'll be covering quite a bit today. Number one, understanding private equity and venture capital, finding investment opportunities, vetting investments, aligning investments with your goals, learning how to invest in an IRA. And a little bit about me. So again, my name is Rachel Stolrow. It's so nice that you all are here today. I've been with the Intrust Group for over 7 years, and I love educating both companies and clients on how to invest in alternatives with a retirement plan and really just taking control of their retirement investments. A little bit about Intrust. So we are self-directed IRA administrators. We have very knowledgeable staff, many holding the CISP, which is the Certified IRA Service Professional Certification. We host monthly webinars and love to educate clients. So go ahead and check out any webinars or on our blog, our learning center, you name it. And then we also host an annual IRA Academy where we are also educating other industry leaders on the CISP certification. We also hold $5 billion in assets under administration. So we've been doing this for quite some time. We have empowered over 45,000 individual investors. We have over 40 years in service. And one of our, I would say, one of the main benefits of working with the Intrust Group is we have a single point of contact business model, meaning each company and client has a dedicated team of two to work with throughout their experience here at the Intrust Group. All right, let's take a poll. What is your biggest hurdle in private equity and venture capital? Is it finding investments with proper market research, poor liquidity, learning how to invest through an IRA? The minimums are maybe too high, market conditions, verifying legitimacy, so maybe due diligence there. Or other, feel free to type that answer into the chat. So again, the question is, what is your biggest hurdle in private equity and venture capital?
Thank you, Rachel. We'll leave this open for another 15 seconds or so, and then I will go ahead and share results. Great. Thank you very much, everyone, sharing them.
All right, so it looks like we are all kind of all over the place, but the three main is finding investments with proper market research, learning how to invest through an IRA, and the legitimacy of investment. So you are in the right place today. We have a great co-host who will kind of walk through this with you. So without further ado, I would like Nathan Larson to come on here and we will dive into the webinar. Thank you again.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Rachel, for that. And I look forward to seeing diving into these polls a little bit deeper. That's wonderful. We don't get a chance to do that on every one of these webinars. So we're going to start off today just by thanking Intrust for having us and tell you a little bit about our company, our background, and what we do and why we do these webinars. So a little bit about Mid-Atlantic Group. We're a private debt fund. We're in the private capital space. And we lend on all types of different projects. We are private debt versus private equity. So we, in the private capital world, will our assets, instead of taking equity positions in companies, we take debt positions on secured property to raise capital for those companies. In addition to that, we do an awful lot of small business growth consulting, and we do mergers consulting for professional services companies. So we do a lot of webinars like this, and we get lots and lots of questions from our current investors and potential investors around how to properly invest inside and outside of an IRA, how to plan for that when you're approaching retirement, in retirement, partially retired. So we've got a nice format and a playbook for all of those different things. So just a little bit about our leadership team here. We're all on the call today. If there's anything specific, we can dive into any of these experts as needed. So a couple of things today, as Rachel already covered, we want to do this to educate people about the products available within an IRA and why they're different than a standard IRA that's, you know, with Fidelity invested in ETFs and stocks and what the benefits are. So we're going to talk about finding, vetting, and aligning those investments with your specific needs. So we're going to dive in and just understanding what we're working with and what these products look like, and some definitions here. So private equity is our management companies that are run by professionals who specialize in taking ownership pieces in other companies. Typically, what they're going to do is look for companies where their specific expertise can add a lot of value. So they may have a lot of background in the sector that the acquired company is focused on. So many times they'll have these professionals that will come in, and through their contacts, through their expertise, through the past companies they've been involved with, they can add value or streamline the model or create contracts and relationships to bring out the value in that business. So sometimes those are in real estate, sometimes they're in manufacturing, sometimes they're in banking or other types of businesses. The businesses vary quite a bit, but it's later stage investments, middle to later stage investments, typically with companies that are mature but need a shot in the arm in terms of extra capital, expertise, bringing their systems and processes up to par with their competition. So the private equity companies look for companies that there's untapped value that they can turn around and capture, typically in a 5 to 8 year timeline. So venture capital is a little bit different. This is going to be businesses that are much earlier stage. This is going to be everywhere from investors that have, or business owners that have a concept, these sort of early stage conceptual business ideas, all the way through launching a product, creating manufacturing, raising the first dollars into the business and having the first sale in the business, all the way through companies that are growing and maybe have revenue but don't have profit, but are growing very quickly and their target market is more of an IPO or a merger or a buyout with a bigger company. So they want to develop a technological advantage, process advantage, a knowledge base advantage, and then grow very quickly. And the liquidity for these types of investments is typically going to be folks that are getting taken out. So if you want liquidity, you're going to have to go to an IPO, you're going to have to go to a merger, you're going to have to go to a reorganization or sale of the business or refinance in the business. And many venture capital funds or individuals will invest in these companies because the person that's investing, the person that's putting up the money, personally feels like they can add value to that business. They typically will invest a large amount in the business. 7 to 20% is typical venture capital ownership structure for one specific round of investing. And that individual needs to know that business and be relatively confident that as the investor, can bring value into the business and have synergies with the knowledge base that exists in the business. So we talk a lot about how to find investments, where do you look for them, how do you know they're legitimate. So we'll dive into that a little bit. Now, we go into this a lot further in our one-on-one business consultations. So we're going to hit some of the things on the surface here, but knowing that this could be an hour-long conversation just on these couple slides, we usually wait and take questions or one-on-one conversations to dive deeper. But there's a lot of online platforms, marketplaces, forums where these companies will list themselves. Especially if you're already an accredited investor, you can join subscription services, databases, and there might be accredited investor networking groups in the city where you live, especially if it's in technology or real estate. Financial advisors is a great way, you know, to get access to these, awareness to these opportunities. Also, we see a lot of CPAs that will work in these networking groups and then bring suggestions and opportunities to their clients. In terms of financial advisors, you really want to look for specific financial advisors. Usually they're registered investment advisors that will have a specialty of non-traded investments or private investments. If you're dealing with a financial advisor that simply just offers traded stocks, bonds, and ETFs, you can really do that on your own. You really want to look for someone that has off-platform or relationships with funds where they can help put you in touch with those people or advise you on what would work best for your situation. And then IRA companies and custodians like Intrust. There's many of them out there. Trust is absolutely one of the best, and they have a great ability, just like we're doing today, to connect investors and align businesses like ours with investors that are looking for opportunities. So, like we said, there's a lot that could go into this, but what we want to do really is find out sectors in the industry that you as individual investors are aware of, right? Warren Buffett always says, don't ever invest in something you don't understand, right? So you've got to find industry trends and sectors that you understand, that you're proficient at least enough to where you can read the information about the company and understand what's going on. And then look through the profiles and the performance metrics of those companies to figure out if that's the stage in the life cycle of a business on where you feel like you belong. So moving into some vetting, this is probably, you know, the next couple of slides is probably the most important thing. We saw in the survey earlier that just figuring out how to vet and determine if these companies are legitimate and how you really boil that down makes a heck of a difference. So the first three things we want to look at is you want to take a look at the professionalism of the management team. What is their experience, education, background, and how do those items, how are they relevant to the business that they're in? Are they subject matter experts in the business that they're running? Do they have the right people in the right seats? And then look at their track record. Number two, look at their financial performance and their projections. Are they put together accurately? Does it make sense? Is the business growing? Is it profitable? Projections are only as good as the person projecting them. So it is a little bit of speculation. And so you really want to look for financials that you understand. And as investors, you should really be prepared to dive into their financial reports. You probably want to look at least 2 years, if not more, of their profit and loss statements and go through at least the last three or four quarters of their balance sheet. If it's a manufacturing type company or they're selling a product versus a service, you may want to dive into their cash flow reports and find out what ratio they have of their cost of goods compared to their total revenue and figure out how efficiently the business is running through doing that. And then you want to look at the market potential and how competitive it is, right? In our investing space, we talk about TAM a lot. TAM, that stands for total addressable market. And the total addressable market just means how big can this be, right? Are we selling doorstops or are we selling mobile devices, right? One is 500,000 and one is 500 million. So those are completely different models. And then you want to look at the competitive landscape. How many other people are doing this? How good are they at doing it? And what's your differentiation? So if you're looking at a company, you want them to be unique, right? And you want the business to be sticky. So how much are they, you want to investigate how much are they, how much does it cost them to acquire a new customer? And how hard do they have to work to keep that customer? And how easy is it for them to leave? So those are some very important aspects of that. So we also want to dive into some key questions and some very specific items that you want to evaluate in addition to what we just talked to. The number one most important item when you're assessing these companies is, are they profitable or not? Right? That is by far the number one thing that you want to know and understand when it comes to understand the metrics of these companies. And for how long have they been profitable? Most of the companies that private equity are going to acquire are going to have profit, but a low profitability margin. And their objective is to streamline the company, typically create value within it, make it more effective, make the product better, trim your operations expenses, and improve your profit margin. So they're going to be profitable companies typically that they're trying to make more profitable. When it comes to venture capital, a lot of times they're not going to have profit. A lot of times they're not even going to have revenue yet. So you got to really think long and hard about, is that the right sort of speculation for your retirement account? Cash flow, are they cash flow positive or are they burning cash? So if you're looking at a financial report that has revenue and expenses but no profit, how much cash do they have on the balance sheet and how much cash are they burning every quarter? And you can quickly figure out when they're going to be to zero. So you want to dig into those cash flow reports or P&Ls and look at what their burn rate is. If you look at their quarterly burn rate and divide that into the amount of cash they have on the books, it's going to tell you one of two things: either when they got to go raise more capital or when they're going to stop being in business. The only avenue to that is growth and to achieve profitability before they run out of cash. So very, very important to look at those timelines. So determining a path, if they're not profitable, determining a path to when they will be profitable. One of the most important things on doing that is as they raise capital, specifically your capital, try to understand how the dollar in from your investment aligns with a direct influence on additional revenue. So for our business, for example, we have, as we raise capital, we deploy that capital immediately into cash flowing loans. So within 30 days, there's a direct line between a dollar in and a dollar 50 coming back to the company. So there's a direct line on cash in, generates revenue immediately. If you're working with a company that's developing a new technology and they need to use your money to go hire a sales force, and they don't have metrics on what that looks like, or they're going to use it to build out systems or put a down payment on an additional warehouse space, it's very difficult sometimes in those early stages to draw a direct line between your investment in, if that investment is going into operating expenses versus directly into revenue generating items. So be very careful about knowing where exactly your money is going to be used and if it goes right to revenue or not. So the other thing we want to talk about is understanding targeted and preferred returns. Targeted returns are not what you're going to make. A targeted return is a business's model that suggests what you potentially could make over the course of the investment. So if you're reading these bios on private equity companies, they say we're going to make 30% return. Well, that's what their model says. If these specific factors happen over a specific timeline, that's what they think they can make. But bear in mind, as you do this, it's the management company and the people raising capital that are doing the projections, right? This isn't a third-party valuation company in most circumstances. So they're relying on models of data that if this, this, and this happens, then this would be the outcome. And a lot of times that is, what does the real estate look like or the prices look like in a market? What's the tax and trade environment going to look like politically? What is the competition going to be like in 5 to 7 years from now? What's inflation going to look like 5 to 7 years from now? What's the interest rates going to be? They're going to process these models off a discounted interest rate. And if they don't know what that rate is, they can't have an accurate model. So there's all these assumptions that are built into the models. And if any one of those assumptions are wrong, those models are going to be off. And when we manage risk, the closer in timeline that we get to that risk analysis, the more accurate it's going to be. If we look at what we think is going to happen in the country, in the economy, 90 days from now or 6 months from now, it's not very hard to figure that out. But if you're looking at what it's going to be 7, 10, or 15 years from now, that's a much, much more difficult evaluation to get accurate. So targeted returns are what their model says they think they can get you. Those are not preferred returns, and they're not fixed, and they're not guaranteed. And so a lot of times people come to me and say, well, what's the difference between a preferred rate and a targeted rate or a targeted return? So a private equity company is typically going to offer you something called a preferred rate. And that is the baseline that they are highly confident is the return they can get for you. So you may be paid that semi-annually or annually in a distribution based on the baseline expectations of the business. So in a lot of cases, that's going to be somewhere around 7% return paid in interest or in a distribution of some sort, or they have sold some property or some equity and they've raised money and they distribute back to you. And then the upside, the target return, is the preferred return, which they are highly confident they can get you, plus the marginal return on top of that, which is sort of their stretch goal. So the target return is the combination of the two. A lot of people get that confused. And you have to look at it, investing in speculation, very differently. We look at the targeted return. The marginal portion of it is fairly common to be looked at as speculation. The preferred return is really sort of your baseline investment. Sort of like any of us that have been in a job or a sales job or hit sales quotas will say, well, I know I can get to X, but X plus 5 is my stretch goal. And that's a good way to look at how private equity operates. You're going to have an investment portion and then a portion that's more of speculation that you can't really count on. And venture capital is pretty much all speculation. You're speculating that a technology is going to take off, that a young manager or business owner is going to be able to run a business the same way he can come up with a product. There's so many different caveats to what does and doesn't work in venture capital. The last thing we want to talk about is the liquidity and volatility. You're going to have a high level of volatility in early stage companies. The earlier the stage of the company, the higher the volatility of that investment will be. And the later stage and the more profitable it is, the more insulated you're going to be from that. Now, liquidity-wise, you're going to have lockup periods on most private equity and most venture capital. Keep in mind that there's no defined timeline. The target return in venture capital, or I should say in private equity, is going to give you a timeline, an estimated timeline, and typically that's going to be 5 to 7, 5 to 8 years, something like that. And your money's locked up until they have a liquidity event other than your preferred returns. And same thing with venture capital. It's typically 5 to 10 years. They're not going to have the money to pay you back your investment. They're waiting on an IPO or a merger or an acquisition or a restructure in order to create a liquidity event to pay those early investors back. So just know that if it's money that you're going to need in a specific time, you better use long-term funds. Let's keep moving. So we want to talk a little bit about, everybody has different goals, different place in your life. Some of us are building on our retirement funds still and contributing to IRAs aggressively. Some are drawing from them. Some are doing a little bit of both. So we're going to dive into that a little farther. So first of all, you're going to take into account, what are your long-term and short-term needs and objectives? You've got to consider the lockup periods, the need for liquidity, and your required distributions if you're of that age. And you may have short-term objectives, which is a percentage of your investment to be liquid. You may have long-term in objectives that would be more like, I want to earn an average of a 8% return over 10 years. And you really need a couple different buckets based on what those needs are. So one of the things we talk about all the time is this sort of Shark Tank dilemma, right? Most of us have seen Shark Tank, and we get so many questions about what the sharks are doing and how do I get involved in something like that. And if you listen to them, they talk about investments as vehicles. And the reason we do that in the industry is because the idea of an investment is that it's going to get you from one place to the next. And whatever we do in life, if we're traveling, if we're going to a wedding, or we're going to Europe, if you're going to go to your grandma's house, whatever the case may be, you're going to choose a way to get there. And the choice in how you do that, whether you choose to take a plane or you choose to walk to the store down the street from your house, it's going to depend on your needs. It's going to depend on the timeline, the distance, and how you care about traveling. We talk about, you can buy a first class seat on a plane, or you can sit in the back by the bathroom. You're going to get there at the same time, and the difference is the experience. And so there's investments that really embody those same choices. If you are in a hurry, you've got certain options. If you want it to be delivered to you comfortably, you can pick different options. If you want to be heavily involved, those are different options. And so they're all different vehicles. And until you know where you want to be and when, it's very difficult to understand what the right investment choice is. We talk about the Shark Tank again, and they are very heavily on the venture capital side. But what you have to remember is that, number one, these sharks are not investing their retirement funds. So don't confuse their business capital that they're investing with a small or medium size IRA. It's just two very different worlds. And so one of the things that you hear them talk about is, these guys are invested in dozens and dozens of different companies. They may put a couple $100,000 in 40 different companies. And if you look at the statistics, even with these specialists, these really, really intelligent, well-off individuals, they're still losing or breaking even on 7 out of 10 of these. And what they hope to do is, out of 10 investments, they're hoping they hit it big on 2, break even on 2, and they plan on losing every dollar on the other 6. And that's sort of the metrics, but you got to hit it really big on those 2. And if you're thinking about that from investing from an IRA standpoint, having one or two or three investments in venture capital and early stage business investments, those could all three be zeros out of that, out of the six out of 10 that are zeros, you may invest in two and they might be both zeros. And that's a very strong likelihood. So I would not recommend this for folks that have medium or small size IRAs. And make sure you know exactly what you're getting into and make sure you can bring value. Invest enough to where they'll listen to you, give you transparency, and invest in the sides of the businesses that will, where you can bring your expertise from your background. So the third aspect of investing in private funds through your IRA, we talked about early stage VC, middle to mature stage private equity. The other end of that, and the third most common investments in IRAs, is going to be private capital or lending, right? So some people will create their own note and lend within their IRA to get a certain return. And what we do for people is we manage that process for them. We assist them with finding, vetting, underwriting, servicing loans that they want to make in their IRAs, and also allowing them to invest in a portfolio of those existing loans to get a piece of that interest income. So the likely outcomes are very different than venture capital and private equity. Whereas venture capital, you are gonna lose 6 or 7 times out of 10, and then you're gonna win a couple times, hopefully very big. In private capital and lending investments in your IRA, you're gonna win on every one at a smaller level. So it's gonna be much more predictable, much more manageable, easier to understand, not a roller coaster type investment.
Quick question, Nathan, from the audience. Mm-hmm. Can SDIRAs also invest in operating businesses like car shops, construction companies, et cetera, directly as opposed to through a private equity fund or as a private lender, just to get all my options cleared up? Thank you.
Yes, Intrust will, as I understand it, allow you to do that, and they will vet that investment in to a limited extent to make sure that it doesn't violate any of the IRS rules with investing. But typically, yes, you would be able to invest in a private company directly.
Thank you. Rachel, anything else to add?
Yes. So as Nathan had mentioned, yes, it is something that you can invest in. Really, there are only three things that cannot be held in an IRA aside from transacting with prohibited persons. But that's a S corporation, collectibles, or insurance policies. Other than that, you can pretty much invest in anything you want within a retirement plan. Again, just keeping in mind some prohibited transactions and persons. And if there's something in particular that you're interested in, reach out. Like Nathan said, we're always happy to walk you through the process to make sure we have what we need in terms of custodying an asset within your retirement plan.
Thank you so much. Nathan, back to you.
Thank you. I think we're ready for the next slide. Great. So the three most common investments within an IRA are going to have these sort of broad categories, but bear in mind that the whole point of having a self-directed IRA is to get additional options outside of publicly traded stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. So the three broad categories are the venture capital side. And by the way, the question we had earlier about lending directly into a business or buying equity directly into a business on your own, that is venture capital, right? You don't have to go through a firm in Silicon Valley and invest in that firm so that they can invest in a company. If you're an accredited investor, you can invest directly in a repair shop or a dry cleaner down the street from you. And if it makes sense to you and you look at the metrics, that is venture capital investing. It's a small scale and it's done locally, but that's probably a good way to do it. You want to invest in things that are close by you. I always say in our business, you need to inspect what you expect. So it's easier to do that if a business is right down the street from you and you know how they're supposed to operate. But that venture capital side is one avenue. The private equity side, where you're investing as a limited partner alongside a general partner who theoretically knows and is an expert in that business model. That's really the third way. And then creating higher rate fixed income investments than you could get in the public markets. And the reason that there are considerably higher rates in the private capital market versus the public capital market is that there's way fewer middlemen. And if you think about the banks, walk down any town we live in and look at the two or three of the tallest, most beautiful buildings in the city, and they're probably going to be banks or financial institutions. And so in private capital, we eliminate all that overhead, seven layers of middle management in a 50-story marble building, and we generally can pass that extra revenue right on to our investors directly. But this is a great slide to look at those three main categories of private investments within an IRA or even outside of an IRA. So you're going to compare risk, right, at first. And so we can see that from left to right, you get less risky. Expected returns with venture capital could be all over the map. You may end up with a goose egg. You may triple your money. You just don't know. Depends on how good you are at picking them. Private equities, you're generally going to get 7 to 14%. Again, 7% is typically going to be a pretty common preferred rate. And then the upside to that could be nothing, or it could be substantial. It could double your return. And with private capital, you're going to understand what that return is going into it. So you're going to select a rate, a yield, but you know when you're going to get paid, you know how much you're going to get paid, and you know how you're going to get paid. The income and distributions, you want to really think about your investments when you need liquidity and when you need cash distributions. In other words, let's say, for example, you're getting into your timeline in life where you need to take your required minimum distributions. And if your money is locked up in private equity or venture capital for 10 years, it's going to be really hard to have liquid money in your account to take as for your required distributions annually. So you want to make sure you have some investments that will give you distributions in currency so you can take them when you need them. It's also important to look at what causes your liquidity timeline. We have to go back to what we were talking about before with early withdrawal options, with liquidity takeouts, with IPOs. You know, with private capital, you're going to be able to determine your liquidity point. Maybe you pick 2 years, 3 years, 6 months, 5 years. You have a lot of options. So you're going to know when your distributions and know when your maturity dates are coming in the future. It's also important, as we talked about the types of income. We're going to talk a little bit about UBIT in a few minutes. And UBIT is sort of the guardrails where you don't want to violate IRS rules outside of it, within a qualified IRA account. So you've got to know how you're going to get paid. You want to know, make sure that it's within the revenue being generated is the planned designed revenue within the business. In private capital, you're going to get interest income from beginning to end, and you're not going to get anything but interest income. And other types of investments, you're going to have capital gains, you're going to have partnership income, you might have a sale of the business, you might have a lot of different types of income that come in. And some of those could violate IRS rules for unexpected or unintended business income. So the other thing we want to look at really here is your time commitments and lockups. So going back to that, it's very important that you understand and in some cases stagger your liquidity points. If you are having different timelines where something needs to occur in the future, then it's very important that you plan for that. You may have some of your investments become liquid in 2 years, some in 5 years, and some that's locked up in 10 years. So just think about that timeline in life before you commit to, you know, whatever percentage to a very long.
Thank you. All right. So what is an IRA and how does it work? Let's dive in. All right. What is a self-directed IRA? So I'll give you what it says here, and then I'll kind of give you also the best way to break it down. So it's a retirement account in which the individual is in charge of making all the investment decisions. So again, as we spoke about earlier, it really puts the power back into the client's hands on what they want to invest in. Most clients are used to having an IRA or a 401k plan at a large bank or a brokerage firm, and that bank or a brokerage firm most likely limits you to stocks, bonds, mutual funds. Companies like the Intrust Group, we specialize in custodying alternative investments within a retirement plan. So a good rule of thumb is it's a private investment. It's something that can most likely be held in a retirement plan. So it's a greater room for diversification, and it allows the client to have those choices of investments. All securities and investments held in a retirement account are administered by a regulated custodian or trustee following the Internal Revenue Code. So yes, this still is a retirement plan. We get asked that a lot. Yes, most likely you can move funds from your current retirement plan into a self-directed IRA without that being a taxable event. You know, speak with one of us to kind of learn the rules about that as well. But it is a retirement plan. We do the record keeping, we do the reporting. But again, we're allowing clients to take control of their investments and giving them the account or the platform to be able to do so. So getting started, it's done in 3 easy steps, and I smile because I do this quite often. So it is something that may, when you look at it, seem easy, but just know that a self-directed IRA is quite, in fact, self-directed. It does take more client involvement, especially getting into bringing funds over or that investment process. So step number one is opening an account. Can be done easily online or offline via paper for anyone who'd like to do so that way. Step number two is fund your account. Typically, it's done through an existing retirement plan, like a 401k or another IRA or 403b, something of that nature, or through a contribution if you have a certain type of plan here. And then step number three is purchase your assets. So what you would do next is you would let us know the type of investment agreement that you'll be provided. And then from there, one of your Intrust reps that you are assigned to will walk you through that process on what we'll need for the investment documents and then the 2-page Intrust form that we will need alongside that investment agreement. So ultimately, we can fund your chosen investment. All righty, so let's wrap up. What's next? As I mentioned earlier, we're really big on education. We love hosting webinars and educating clients to the best of our ability. So next month in July, we'll have investing in self-storage with your IRA. Have feedback or topic requests. So again, we're always open to any feedback, topic requests, you name it. So feel free to take a brief survey as you leave. If you'd like more information on IRAs, our learning center on our website is always a really good place to start. We've been doing this for quite some time. So in our learning center, we have so many blogs, articles, webinars, probably for almost any investment that you're looking to invest in or any topic that you'd like to educate yourself a little bit more on. So I'd look at that as well. And then, of course, you can follow us on any of these social media platforms. All right, one more poll. Since going through this webinar today, do you feel more confident in private equity and venture capital investing? Yes, or do you think you may need a little bit more help still?
Thank you, Rachel. I'll leave it open for about 20 more seconds. All right, thank you very much. And I'm just going to share real quickly. Thank you very much for everyone for participating. If you do still have questions and need help understanding, please get them into that Q&A box and we'll do our best to cover them in the Q&A in a couple minutes.
All righty, so moving on to the Q&A, as Andrew had mentioned, please feel free to type any questions into the question box and we will go ahead and answer them. All righty, so the first question is, what are the mechanisms for setting up a self-directed IRA? What's the capability available through any retirement plan? I'm not sure I'm 100% following, so please do let me know if I'm off base here, but setting up a self-directed IRA, really, you can do so pretty easy and quickly online. We do have a KYC that we'll need to do, and it does a quick compliance check for each individual opening up a retirement plan. And what is the capability available through any retirement plan? I can't speak to all retirement plans, but here at the Intrust Group, we do specialize in custodying alternative investments. So again, pretty much any investment outside of the public stock, bond, mutual fund investments. Again, I apologize if I'm not quite following, feel free to drop in another question. So it looks like another question says for IRA only, not a regular account. I will let Nathan speak to this, but typically any investment can be done inside or outside a retirement plan. But again, I'll let you speak to that, Nathan.
So what was the question exactly? Was it whether
for IRA only, not regular account? So I'm assuming
for our fund. Yeah. So about 75% of our investments are outside of IRAs. So we designed the plan, the investment sort of metrics from the ground up to help folks with to replace their earned income as they're approaching retirement with portfolio income. So it's one of the rare investments that actually pays you every single month interest. So a lot of people outside of IRAs will invest their savings to get mailbox money, as we call it, coming in every single month to help in their budget to supplement Social Security or retirement, pension income, whatever it might be. And then we designed some very specific plans within our fund for IRAs that take advantage more so of less frequent distributions, so you can get a compound interest effect and a little bit higher returns if you don't need those monthly distributions, but it still offers you the ability to have cash semi-annually in your account so that when you do take distributions, if you're needing to take required minimum distributions, you can do so without liquidating your assets. So we've got a specific plan where we can back our way into the cash flow needs by the investment size.
Thank you. Another one for you, Nathan. You mentioned accredited investor. Are you able to define what that is?
Yeah. So the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, has specific definitions for investors that are permitted to invest in private securities. This was part of the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 in an attempt to have better customer consumer protections built into investments. So there are several different ways to become an accredited investor. The main way is by having a minimum of $1 million in assets, either solely or jointly. There's also some minimum income requirements. So if you made in the previous year and are expected to make this year a certain level of income, somewhere around $200,000 or $250,000, that would qualify you. there's also other licenses you can have that would qualify you as well, such as being licensed with the SEC or with FINRA, or having a Series 7 or Series 6 licenses would qualify you as an accredited investor. So it's a combination of knowledge, experience, and net worth.
Awesome. Thank you very much. All right. The next one says, what is the process to vet investments within trust, timeline, documentation, funding, et cetera? All righty. So I will dive into this a little bit. So timeline can vary so long as we have everything that's required to fund the investment, meaning cash is in the account, we have the proper documentation. The timeline could be about 3 to 5 business days for our investment team to review your documents. When they're reviewing your documents, again, we can't endorse or provide any due diligence, et cetera, on any investments. However, we can make sure we have what's needed to custody it. So typically what that is it's the investment agreement. It is the purchase amount. It is the purchaser being the name of your investor or your IRA, which is an entity instead of you listed as the individual investor. And then we have our 2-page in trust form. So that is what is required for us to custody the investment. And of course, typically ahead of time, we have manager signature for that investment. Funding, again, it's about 3 to 5 business days for us to review that investment documentation and paperwork. Let me see here. The next one says, I have a current investment in a private company. I'd like to chat with somebody at the in trust group. We are happy to help. Please feel free to contact client services at theintrustgroup.com and we will get you over to your dedicated representative. This one is for you, Nathan. Does Mid-Atlantic Fund provide investors with private debt opportunities lists? A list of private debt opportunities, it seems.
Yes, we have a program where we assist people to in lending directly. So we charge, and it's actually a free service. The folks that bring opportunities to us that are looking to borrow money pay us to connect them with investors. So we have a huge list of folks that are looking for projects to get funded, and we vet them, inspect them, write up a term sheet for them, and we can discuss that with individual investors. So we work on matching that with them. So we'll meet with each individual investor and we'll discuss their risk parameters, their timelines, their liquidity needs, and what their anticipated or expected returns are. And then we'll go find different investment options in the lending space where they can, with us as an administrator, they can lend directly to that individual and actually be on title as the lien holder. It's a smaller part of our business, but we do quite a bit of it. And so we'll help with that end to end.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. The next one says, do we host Roth IRA LLC? So we have tons of different plans, whether that's Roth IRA, traditional SEP, 401k. However, all of our plans here, again, are self-directed and we do custody LLC investments. So if you're looking, and if I'm understanding correctly, you want some sort of LLC or single multi-member LLC, these are investments that, yes, you can hold within your in-trust retirement plan. Next one for Nathan, is there a minimum investment in your preferred equity fund, specifically your funds that provide a steady cash flow for the investor? Also, does your fund issue a 1099 to the self-directed LLC? If yes, does the LLC need to report the amount annually to the IRS? So I'll touch quickly. We are required to do annual reporting. We do annual reporting on the value of your investment. We start reminding clients, I would say, around October to get in those fair market valuations because it doesn't happen automatically. Like you mentioned, it's either through some sort of 1099 statement, something of that nature to update the value. So I'll let you get to the other portion of the question.
Yeah, thank you for covering that. And I think my portion of that question was, What is the minimum investment size? So we have one investment option that starts at $50,000, sort of a test drive or try it before you buy it type of thing to get comfortable with us and get comfortable working together. Most of our investment options start at, it opens up the options a lot at $100,000. And then we have several that sort of two and 500,000. But at $100,000, it opens you up to 80% of our investment options.
My apologies. Next question. Can I be on the management team of the venture and invest in the venture at the same time? It really depends. I believe at the end of this session, you're able to reach out to an intrust rep. I would do that. We can send you a list of prohibited transactions and persons because there are some nuances in terms of that. So we're happy to get that information over to you.
You know, in a bigger picture, just aside from the IRA side of it, it's very common to have a venture capital investor become part of the board of directors or the advisory board of those companies. So when you're going to invest a large amount of money, 10, 20% of the capital into a business and take an ownership piece, they're going to expect you to stick your nose in there and want to know what's going on and have a say in some things and voice your opinion. So it's very, very common.
Thank you, Nate. Next one. So very helpful webinar. Thank you. What is the penalty if we need to liquidate earlier than the 12-year period or the illiquid period?
Yeah, so that depends on what investment it is, right? So a lot of times, if you're in private equity or you're specifically venture capital, there likely is no option. You would need to sell that investment stake to another buyer. If the documents you signed even allow that, some of them do not allow resale of those investments. So read those documents carefully. There are some types of private equity investments where after 3 or 4 years, you can get out with a penalty and maybe 90 to 120 days of notice. And there's caveats to it. You typically can't be more than 5% of the total capital in the firm. There are certain stages of the business that those early withdrawals are prohibited. So not very liquid. On the private capital side, like for what we do, it's really designed a lot like a CD, right? There's a hard lock for 12 months. And then just like at the bank, if you buy a 3 or 5 year CD, you need it a year early, you can get out, you can pay a 3 or 4% penalty. And within 60 to 90 days, you can be liquid if you give us a little bit of notice.
Awesome. Thank you. And like we mentioned before, always want to work with some sort of tax advisor, financial planner. A lot of alternative investments are illiquid. So it's definitely good to speak with a professional that knows your portfolio specifically so they can strategize what funds to maybe put in one.
Yeah. And almost all of them, especially private equity, there's required disclosures that they have to give you. Primarily, you're going to get something called a private placement memorandum. And those liquidity options and penalties are going to be outlined in detail in that document. So if you read it carefully before you invest, you should be able to determine what those options are or what those penalties are.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Well, it looks like that is all the questions that we have for today. Our contact information is up on the screen. So if there's something that wasn't able to be answered, please feel free to reach out. We are always happy to answer those questions for you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Of course. Thank you, Nate. Have a good one. Bye, everybody. Thank you.